Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
If you lost Survivor and you're feeling down, David and Jessica will turn it around. They'll break down the rules and they'll show you how. You played yourself and got voted out. This is why Blank lost. And this is why Blank lost. Oh, baby, this is why Blank lost.
Welcome back to the final special edition of Why Blank Lost, as we finish up our series of Why Blank One podcasts in parallel with the RHAP Survivor Season rankings. This week, we're at number one, Heroes versus Villains, as we discuss Sandra truly ascending to the throne. I'm David Bloomberg, and with me, of course, is, as I said last time, the queen of this podcast, Jessica Lewis.
That's right. Was I just the queen of this podcast? I don't know if you limited it like that, but I'll take it.
Yeah. I don't want to start invading other lands just yet.
I know.
Or at least not announcing it. If you do that, you got to do it more secretively.
Okay. I have to strategize a little bit.
Exactly.
All right. I'll have to figure that out. Yeah, so this is great because we finally made it all the way through. I'm very excited about that. I can stop trying to binge entire seasons of Survivor, which I have thoroughly enjoyed. I'm not complaining. And I will say that there is so many reasons why this season is number one. It truly is a remarkable season. Great rewatch and excited to talk about it.
Yeah, when I did my rewatch, I sat down. And normally, throughout all the rewatches we've done, I could watch a few episodes and then I'd have to take a break and do something else. This one, I sat down on Labor Day weekend and I just watched it. I mean, I think I may have taken breaks for like Australian Survivor, but they weren't forced breaks. They were more like Australian Survivor is on and I don't want to be spoiled on social media. So I better watch it type of thing.
Yeah.
But other than that, yeah, I just went straight through it. And there's a reason it's number one.
Absolutely. It's a phenomenal season. And the people that were on the cast are just all incredible, which there's a lot of things to say about some people on the cast for sure. Not just Sandra, but everyone who was there. I have kind of a theory about the season that I'll share later in the podcast. Yeah, a little bit of a theory. But yeah, overall, I do agree. I wish I could have powered through the way that you were suggesting. I just had a lot of other work things coming in, so I had to do it a little bit differently, but I crammed and I got it done. And it was okay cramming because it was enjoyable. Like I wasn't sitting there kind of through the whole process. I was excited about it because it was, and the thing is there's a lot of stuff I even didn't even remember had happened, which also makes it that much more fun to watch because it's a different watch when you've seen it the first time versus the rewatch. I think you just pick up on all of those things that you missed the first time, obviously.
Yeah. And of course, we actually watched up through the JT Boot episode for the Wiggle Through Time.
Yeah.
But even rewatching those episodes again, which we had seen fairly recently, it still was enjoyable.
Yeah. I loved it. It was great. But listen, I have to ask you a question before we really delve into this. I sent you something. Did you get the package that I sent you?
Yeah, I got, this was delivered by drone.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
So you should open that because.
I should open it?
Yeah, because if there's one thing I learned watching this season.
This is a big box.
Well, you should look inside because there's banana etiquette, right? So.
Oh.
I mean, I can't sit around watching green bananas without my little debaucherous David Bloomberg, right?
That's right.
We have to have our bananas together.
Well, and yes, you learned well that if you're going to take a banana, you have to offer one to the people around you.
Exactly. So now you have a banana.
I do.
From my set of bananas.
Yes. We can call each other. Well, thank you.
You're very welcome. I hope you enjoy your banana. Yours, yes. It looks a little rough, though. I think the shipping might have banged it around a little bit.
That's going to happen.
Putting a banana in a box and shipping it across many states.
Especially, I mean, you didn't have anything smaller than this. I mean,
you do what you can, right?
Must have been bouncing all over the place.
Hence the bruising of the banana.
Right.
Listen, I made it work, right?
But considering how many green bananas they had, they probably could have used something like that to make them get ripe
faster.
That's
true. That is true. And yeah, okay. We should talk about the bananas just a little bit more because at the very end, there was a lot of bananas left. So I don't know what people were complaining about as far as the bananas were concerned. But anyway, there seemed to be a lot of
bananas. They were green bananas and they were plantains. Nobody was complaining about the plantains.
Okay.
They had plenty of plantains. But the bananas, you had to wait until they were nice and ripe to eat them. And then people would just pull them down.
I will say there is actually banana etiquette. I will agree with that because we had a huge thing of bananas at the beginning. And if you took a banana, you did make sure that everybody else got a banana at the same time.
So you learned from this season.
Yeah. So there is banana etiquette.
Yeah.
Anyway.
All right. Well, we are not just here to talk about banana etiquette. We are here to talk about the winner, Sandra. Mm-hmm. And throughout this series, we focused on two groups. Those who made us wonder how they won and those who did such a good job that, of course, it's worth discussing them. Obviously, the queen is once again in the second group. And we'll also discuss the snake with two heads, Parvati and Russell, as we compare all their play to the rules that I wrote after the first season and have been modifying ever since. If you'd like to refamiliarize yourself with the version before I update them for the new season, you could check it out at robhasawebsite.com/blog/survivor rules. Or you can get the shorter and much more colorful version of the rules in poster form at tinyurl.com/davidrulesposter2.
That's right. And if you want to order, but you are outside of the United States, you can actually go through my Twitter account. You can send me a message and we can set up an arrangement through PayPal and I can ship it off to you. So let me know if you're interested, if you're outside of the United States.
That's right. And one rule that does not appear there, but you know, is on my shirt. Villains always win.
Oof, I know. It's so crazy, right? But
yes, this is.
There's a reason. There's a reason.
Well, yes, this is my official hero. One of my two official heroes versus villains shirts.
Love it. You are all decked out with the t-shirts, I must say.
I've been buying them for the last however many years. Where else am I going to wear them? People are going to, I wear this down the street and they're going to be like, what?
They might be a little taken aback.
Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, speaking of t-shirts, other than this t-shirt, we also have the poster in t-shirt form.
That's right. Look at that. It's beautiful.
And you can go to robhasawebsite.com or robhasapodcast.com. Click the merch link near the top. That'll take you to the RHAP shop. You can scroll through to find out not just one, but two designs.
Very nice.
Well, there's the camera. Why Blank Lost, and on the back, Why Blank Won. And of course, there's even a mug.
There's everything. Go
there's
shopping.
Everything.
Go crazy.
Yes, go shopping. And what they don't have, though, we do not have specialty bananas
That's
with
true.
Our rules printed on them.
If we
We're
started
have to look into
doing
that,
that'd be kind of crazy.
Yes.
You
yes.
should add banana etiquette to your rules.
We'll say it's within rule five.
Okay.
The social game and banana etiquette.
I love it.
Yes.
Good.
Yes. But anyway, before we get to the rules, we've already started talking a bit about the season, but there's a couple other things that I wanted to mention and maybe some other non-fruit related thing that Jessica wanted to mention. We'll see. And we already discussed some of the things, like I mentioned, when we did why JT lost. So I encourage everyone to go back, listen to why JT lost. You'll hear some of the things like we talked about banana etiquette even then, but we went into more depth. We only talked about the first half of banana etiquette, not the whole storyline of banana etiquette. But anyway, now on the reunion, anyone who watched saw that Sandra seemed almost defensive. And I asked her about that in my post-game interview at the time. She said, "I was defensive because we had been together since 12:30. Russell never spoke to me, but he would tell everybody, yeah, she better bring her game because I'm going to make her look stupid. I was like, he's the stupid one. He did the same thing in Heroes versus Villains that he did in Samoa. After watching his finale from Samoa, I don't see how he came back and played Heroes versus Villains. I knew he had lost just from watching the questions he was asked at Final Tribal Council. Mm. I swear, with his arrogance, I'm almost certain he thought he was a winner when he played with us. He may not respect my game, but I don't respect his either. At the end of the day, the loser here is still Russell. He's still furious."
Wow. Yeah, he was a little angry for sure.
A little, yeah. And the thing is, she was right then, and she's probably still right today about him being furious.
Yeah, I mean, he was really happy about winning the 100 grand, and kudos to him for doing that. And I do think that it's an interesting point that he's trying to point out a flaw that exists in the game. And Survivor's not perfect. There are a lot of things that we have complained about as far as the way the game is structured. And there's a lot of components that I think CBS could do differently that I've also addressed on this podcast. But I do think that there is something to be said about the perception that the viewers have of you versus the perception that the players have of you. Because the players see everything. The viewers see everything, but with a twist, right? It's an interesting way to kind of parse it out where we're seeing all of the confessionals and the things that people are saying, whereas the people who are playing the game, they're seeing everything that's happening in the game that we're not seeing. And we're seeing the confessionals that they're not seeing. And so it's an interesting dynamic to see how the viewers respond to particular players versus how the people playing the game respond to those players. And I think if anyone needs to be seen as having the most understanding, it's the actual players, because obviously those actual players are the ones that played with that person, regardless of what was said in confessionals. That doesn't give you the whole story. So I do think that it's an interesting idea, and I do think that there is something to it. But it doesn't necessarily mean that it's a flaw. It's just a perception thing.
Well, and it's a different game. I mean, that's what Jeff Probst said. It's a different game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that is not the game. Here's the thing. CBS tried that with the first season of Big Brother, and other countries do it with Big Brother. And that season of Big Brother was so boring because anyone who was remotely interesting got voted out by the viewers.
Yeah.
Russell probably would have been voted out by the viewers early on because they would have hated him.
Yeah.
It would have been a battle. It would have been an interesting battle between the people who loved him and the people who hated him.
Right. For sure.
You know, but it would be like, you know, a lawyer prosecuting a case, and instead of being a jury of their peers, it was everyone sits at home and presses a button according to the media coverage that they've been watching.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just it doesn't work. Mm-mm. And the funniest thing, though, was he didn't even say that the viewing audience should decide everything. He said they needed to have a percentage of the vote. Now, as I was watching both originally and then again this past week, my immediate thought was, Russell, even if that were true, a percentage would not have gotten you the win this season because you got no votes from the other players.
Right. Yeah, the math just isn't there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I just found it incredibly funny that he could not see that. You know, I mean, he was so tunnel visioned into his point that he couldn't see that it didn't matter.
Right. Well, and I'm curious if, because he said multiple times that he would not change the way that he played, and he clearly didn't. He played the same way that he played in Samoa.
Right.
And he was very adamant that if I play again, I'm going to play the same way. And I almost feel like it's become kind of his mission to prove that, yes, he does play the best game. And yes, this is the game that he should win by playing this way. And so he's almost convinced himself that I will teach everyone, you know, I will teach everyone who plays this game with me that I am the best player and that I should win because of it. And so if I keep playing, people will begin to understand that they need to respect my gameplay. And I think that's how he walked into this season, thinking that though it didn't work last time, I'm going to do the same thing again because it's right and I'm going to make them see that it's right.
Yeah.
And it clearly didn't work out for him.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that's something that a lot of children think, the way a lot of children think. But as adults, most of us realize that doesn't work. You know, I mean, if your workplace has rules and one of the rules is you only get a half hour lunch and you like taking 45 minute lunches, but you then do more work later on. So you take a 45 minute lunch, but then you work an extra hour later.
Mm-hmm.
You may think logically that makes sense, right. But if your workplace has certain rules, you can't just go ahead and do it and say, well, I'm going to show them, I'm going to keep taking my illegally long lunch, but I'm going to show them. No, that's not going to get you anywhere in life.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I have to give Russell credit too, though, because he is a phenomenal player. He truly is exceptional at this game. And the fact that he was able to make it to the final three twice and in the way that he got there, I mean, he really was running circles around so many people in that camp. So I do think he is truly a great Survivor player, but, and I know we'll get to this, but I think there is a component of his game that negatively affects him across the board. But I do think he deserves to be known as a great Survivor player, but he is flawed. It's not the game. He is flawed.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we will get there about, you know, exactly how he made the final three this time. Is that worthy of praise? Spoiler, no. But you know, we'll get to it.
I'm being good. I'm not jumping ahead.
I know. I'm jumping ahead. What the hell? Are we in backwards world?
It's a damn banana.
Yes, it threw me. So anyway, but before we get there, is there anything else about this season that you want to discuss before we start down that path?
Besides wanting to talk about everybody who played, I won't do that now. But the challenges, oh my word, were some of the most aggressive physical challenges we have ever seen. And I almost feel like CBS did it on purpose because they knew who they were going to be bringing on and they knew how strongly competitive all of these people were. And so they were like, let's pick every physical challenge we can possibly choose so we can just have broken limbs and people injuring themselves to the point that they can't play the game anymore. I was just craziness, absolutely crazy. And I was looking at the setup where James hurt his knee. And who the hell designed that? Like, that was just an accident waiting to happen. So I just think that was something that was overwhelming this season, is just how physical these challenges were. And so you do end up feeling for those people who are not that strong in challenges. And that was a resonating theme that we heard about Courtney and Sandra, was how bad they were at the challenges. Well, when they're that physical and, you know, and you just don't have that physicality about yourself, it makes it very, very difficult for people to excel. So I found that really quite fascinating, that they were just so hard on the players.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it was because of the theme: heroes, villains, battling it out, you know, and I really think that's why it was just, you know, the dedication to the theme in that way. But yes, seeing people thrown around like that, it was amazing. There weren't more injuries.
Oh, I know. And the other thing, too, just before we move on, because you just mentioned the theme, talk about ownership that these players had in what they were labeled as, whether they were a hero or a villain. It was quite incredible to see how proud they were, even though some joked, like, I'm not a villain. Well, I should be over there. But it really was something that carried through even after the merge. Nobody talked about yin and yang. It was all about villains and heroes, and people really stuck to it. It was quite incredible.
Well, I mean, I would say on the hero tribe, there were a number of players, and I won't go into it now. I'm sure I've gone into it before, that were not very heroic. You know, they were, you know, there's a couple of players that were definitely not acting very heroic. And that was pointed out at the time. And then there were some villains who, you know, weren't terribly villainous. And honestly, I think Sandra was one of them.
Yeah, I don't disagree. When she was on, and I thought it was interesting because when you would look at who was on which tribe, where she was a villain along with Parvati, but then you've got like Amanda on the other side who, and you've got Suri on the other side. And it's like all of these people, and like, it was like they, some of them played the games together, but then they got put on different, like she played with Rupert and Rupert's a hero and Sandra's a villain. And granted, I mean, she, we talked about her obviously quite recently in the season that she had won previously on Pearl Islands, but it, it's interesting just to see how even though people that worked in groups together in an alliance on previous seasons were then split between a hero and a villain.
Well, that's because Rupert is a hero, you know, and
he's very proud of that.
Yes, yes.
And that's good.
Yeah.
He loved it. He loved it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It was his dream come true.
Now we're going to take a quick break for our sponsors and we'll be right back. We're back, so let's get back to the show.
All right. Well, we can start moving on toward the rules here. Sandra arrived at Heroes versus Villains as perhaps the least respected winner. While other winners like Parvati came in with targets on their backs, there was none on Sandra. Did this work to her advantage? How was her game similar to Pearl Islands and how did she change it? Did the jurors vote against Russell and Parvati or for Sandra? Does it even matter? And what insights into Russell's mind were revealed when looking back at my original cast interviews? Scary. Now that we've done a full rewatch and I've gone back over my articles from the time with a fresh perspective, it's time to take a new look at why Sandra won again.
I love it. I love your little intros. They're so good.
The first and most important rule, of course, says to scheme and plot. Last podcast, we noted that Sandra wasn't what we would call a typical schemer. And indeed, we have a similar situation this time as Russell took on the role of typical schemer and even expanded it. But Sandra is a true Survivor fan and noted at the reunion that she watched and learned from other seasons and players about what to do and what not to do. I asked her what some of the most important things were that she learned and put to use this season. And the first thing she said was not only to have one alliance, but to have two good alliances and to make sure I'm in the majority. Now, I would say she already mastered the part about making sure she was in the majority back in Pearl Islands.
Right.
You know, I mean, last time we discussed how Sandra's Pearl Islands plan was to be the person others could come to for a vote, as long as it wasn't her, of course. Though that wasn't her only strategy, and she also formed a couple early solid alliances with people she could absolutely trust. That was Pearl Islands. This time, she had to amp up the active part of her game, partly because she needed to scramble in order to make it through several votes.
Yeah, and I do think, to her credit, she was a little more quiet in the beginning than we would have, I think, expected after seeing Pearl Islands. I mean, I feel like Sandra is someone who kind of like revs up as the game goes along and she gets a little more abrasive and a little more willing to say stuff. And I know at the beginning things were rough with that first challenge, but I think that was just people really going at it in that challenge and going a little crazy. But I think for the most part, like you really did watch her game progress and get better as the season progressed. She was very kind of slow in the beginning, which I think is smart, you know, slow build until you really need to put yourself in a better position and you really need to start making those moves. Sandra's not someone that has ever necessarily been known for those big moves that we often hear about. And she's not usually the one that's leading the charge because she doesn't want to have that target on her back. So I think that's part of her strategy, too. She's very smart in how she maneuvers all of the egos and the personalities and lets people make decisions, but she's still feeding her ideas to those people and to other people as well. So I think that's all part of her strategy in order to get to the end, because clearly she's made it there multiple times and she's been very successful.
Yeah. And for anyone who may remember when we did Why Sandra Lost Winners at War, one reason was she started trying to make some bigger moves. You know, instead of trying to stay in the background. Now, at that point, I mean, once you've won twice, you can't stay in the background. But,
right. Yeah.
You know, Now, in this season, early on, yeah, she was quiet, but she joined Boston Rob's alliance. When that got destroyed, she began using her strategy of voting for anybody else to keep it being right. Keep it from being her. But she also took specific actions to protect herself, such as planting seeds in Russell's head about Coach when it looked like she was almost certainly going to be voted out. Sitting and watching that on our screens, it was hard to believe Russell fell for that.
I know.
But she knew exactly what his weak spots were and how to play him.
Yeah.
You know, and that one vote delay was all she needed, because then the villains foolishly decided to vote off Courtney instead of her.
Right.
And then came the merge when she tried to jump ship, emphasis on tried. And that was smart, because she knew she was on the bottom of Russell's alliance. But of course, then Candace decided to jump to the villains, even knowing full well that Sandra was trying to flip to the heroes.
Mm-hmm.
And that move, by the way, still makes me facepalm.
Yeah.
That pretty much decided the rest of the season, and then Sandra continued to do what she needed in order to stick around. She still tried to change things up a few more times, but the heroes never listened. Sandra even told me that while we didn't see it, she was going to try to give Rupert her immunity idol as a way to flip things against Russell. But before she could do it, Rupert blabbed about Sandra to Russell. You know, that whole thing where she was like, loose lips, sink ships.
Yeah.
And so that ensured the total demise of the heroes right there.
Wow, that's fascinating. But I do think there's a couple of things in there that are worth noting, too, because you called it Boston Rob's alliance. So I think that's interesting that we didn't see Sandra's alliance, right? We saw Sandra align with people, but she was always part of a bigger group, and she was never right. seen as the person running the show, which is part of her strategy.
Mm-hmm.
But I also feel like, you know, she's just one of those people that I think she has taken notes on what she's seen other people do, because what she did to Russell is a very Boston Rob strategy, right? You find out what is significant and important to that person. And it's something you hear Boston Rob talk about all the time, and Coach in particular. What matters to Coach? And then that's the thing that you need to present to him when you are negotiating or discussing and coming up with a new strategy or a new game plan. And I think that's something she took from his book, because she really did it so well, but it also fit with her personality so well, because she's not someone who I think people see as the strategist. And so if she's coming to you with information, I think people are a little more likely to buy into it, just because it's not her thing to run around and to scramble and to do anything outlandish and crazy. She's pretty straightforward, right? And she tells you what she thinks, and she tells you how she feels, and she tells you what she thinks about you to you. And so if she comes to you and says, hey, this is what was happening, I think there's more of a likelihood to believe that on the other person's end, because it fits into Sandra's whole gameplay.
Right, right. Now, another part of Sandra's gameplay, and it's something that we mentioned last time, another portion of the first rule says part of plotting and scheming can also be making good use of sneakiness. And then the rule goes on to specifically use Sandra as a prime example of this, as it did even at the time she was playing Heroes versus Villains. And then she did it again this season, using information she obtained by listening into conversations, spying on Russell, searching for the hidden immunity idol, helping to set up the battle between Russell and Rob.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that was amazing.
Yeah. Now, amusingly, this part of the rule also mentions something else I quoted last time, that, quote, she was able to use that information to talk to Rupert, who mostly ignored it. So Rupert does not learn from his past mistakes.
No. And I think that, you know, Rupert was just someone who wants to try to find the good in whoever he's interacting with and dealing with. And it doesn't matter how many times he gets mushed in the face, he still wants to try to find something good about that person and try to find honor. And unfortunately, he just kept getting mushed.
Yes. Yes. Now, when I asked Colby why he voted for Sandra to win, one thing he specifically mentioned was that even after Candace flipped, Sandra, quote, continued to play the best game she had. She was coming to us when it might work, and when it didn't, she went back to the villains. There were a couple pivotal moves that put her at the end. So, in other words, she was scheming and plotting.
She was.
Now, moving to the second place player, we could say that Parvati certainly understood this rule, knowing quite well of the need to scheme and plot, and especially to manipulate people. At the time, it was widely believed that she had made deals before heading out to Samoa. Shocking, I know.
Shocking.
Yes, but even if there weren't any specific pregame alliances, many players worried that she would get together with the likes of Amanda, James, and Cerie at the merge. Of course, that didn't happen, in part because two of the three weren't there and the other lied to her. But even so, Parvati had to survive long enough to make it to that point. So she aligned with the one player that nobody else knew right off the bat and took that alliance all the way to the end while making other side alliances as well. She even ended up more or less aligned with Sandra by the end game.
Yeah, and I do think that Parvati just has a skill about her that is nothing that can be taught. It's just a natural ability to connect with people and somehow manage all of this negativity, I think, that can come with Parvati. They've got assumptions about her. They've got beliefs about her. They just have this thing about Parvati being this young female who is able to manipulate people with her smile. And, you know, Coach is talking about her rolled down bikini. And so she's got a lot of things that I think are almost working against her because people make those assumptions about her just based upon that. But she backs everything up. I mean, this girl is like, if you're going to align with me, I can guarantee you I'm going to have your back and I'm going to work with you. Like the conversation they had with Jerry about, I can guarantee you Final Four. And Jerry looks at her and says, how can you even do that? And she's like, I already did it once in Micronesia. Like, it wasn't even like a question. And she is a beast in the challenges and just wins things. And it's everything just seems to come very natural to her when it comes to this game, even though looking at her, you wouldn't think that. You would think that she would be playing a different type of game. So kudos to her for finding that balance, for not only being able to scheme and plot and manipulate based upon some of those preconceived notions or assumptions people have about her, but then also playing a badass game and being just a really impressive player all around.
Yeah. All right. So moving on from Parvati, because I have nothing more to add to that. I mentioned at the beginning of our discussion of this rule that Russell played the role of the typical schemer, and there is no doubt that Russell understood this aspect of the game and played it well. He had multiple alliances with various different people throughout the game. He shifted easily from one ally to another, always assuring whoever he was talking to that they were the real ally. And most of the time, those people believed him. I noted in our discussion of why Natalie won Samoa a little while ago that Russell made this rule not only the focus of his game plan, but almost his entire game plan.
Mm-hmm.
And the same was true this time around.
And I have no idea how he managed to pull this off as well as he did every single time. The amount of wheeling and dealing that he would do with everyone and saying to people's face that then you're out next time. You're gone next time. If you don't do this, if you're not listening to me right now, you're gone next time. And it was fascinating to watch people listen to this, process the information, and then still go along with him. It was absolutely amazing.
Well, I mean, it was a combination of scheming and bullying.
Yes.
Like, he would just be right there and tell you, like you said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is why it was funny when near the end he said, Sandra, are you with me or against me? I'm against you, Russell.
I know. Yeah.
And she didn't even know what he was talking about. She's just like, what the hell is this guy talking about?
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
So. All right, we can move to the second rule, which says not to scheme and plot too much and to keep your scheming secret. In our last podcast, I said, I think it's pretty clear that Sandra didn't scheme and plot too much, and she generally did an excellent job of keeping her scheming secret, That's why she was never seen as a threat, because it always seemed that somebody else was in control. Indeed, it might be said that somebody else almost always was in control, but she was able to decide which side she was on when there was a choice between two players with controlling interests. Now, that was what I said last time. It sounds familiar somehow.
Are we to repeating?
What happened this game, because it was almost identical.
Yeah.
You know, the only thing I would say differently is that, as we already discussed, she exerted more control this time, but never enough to draw unwanted attention.
Yeah. And I think that Sandra is someone who understands what her abilities are, and she leans into those. And so there was nothing about her prior game that was really terrible. You know, that people looked at and went, oh, this is shocking. I know that she wasn't as impressive of a winner in comparison to some other people that have won the game. But she knows what her strengths are, and she's willing to utilize those strengths. So there really wasn't much that she needed to change, because I think we've seen Sandra try to change, and what's happened? She ends up getting voted out.
Right.
Whereas if she just plays Sandra's game that really only Sandra can play, she goes all the way to the end.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, Parvati, on the other hand, just had to breathe, and she would be accused of scheming and plotting too much.
Right.
Or plotting to scheme too much, or planning to plot to scheme. I mean, you name it.
But just really, being there.
She kept things fairly simple. Even when her side alliances were outed, such as her bond with Danielle, which another facepalm moment as Danielle is sitting there in tribal council being like, I am really close with Parvati. And Parvati's like, shut up.
I know.
I mean, she didn't say anything, but I could read her mind. Yeah. But even when that happened, it wasn't Parvati who paid the price.
Right. And I do think that it's really interesting that she found herself always kind of fighting this idea that she was scheming and plotting all of the time, as opposed to just being able to scheme and plot. So she was having to do double duty. Like, okay, I'm playing this game and I'm going to scheme and plot, but I also have to convince people that I'm not doing that, because they all think that I am. And so the perception of Parvati really, I think, outweighed her actual game at times, where people were giving her more credit than she actually deserved. Not that she was doing a bad job, but they would automatically assume, well, Parvati is really, you know, she'll get to you, and she's going to end up, she's going to work her magic. And sometimes, I mean, you actually saw her actually struggling with this sometimes during the game, where nobody wants her there. Nobody wants to even talk to her. And that's got to be a hard thing, because she's trying to play the game, but nobody wants to play with her because they're making these assumptions about her.
Well, assumptions that have been somewhat backed in fact. So, you know.
Well, and I understand that. And I'm not saying that what she did and how she played the game is perfect, but there is something to be said about her not relying on certain aspects of herself to carry her through the game.
Yeah.
So, and that's what I appreciate, is that she was kind of like the full package, if you will, where she's like, I'm not just going to rely upon the charismatic self that I am. I'm also going to do all of these other things in addition to having that. And I appreciate that.
Yeah. And that wasn't meant as a slight against her, but more of, when you come into a returning player season, you bring along all your baggage.
Oh, 100%. Absolutely. You know? Yes.
So that's all I was saying. Hey, moving on to Russell. Even he did fine in the second role. Yeah, he had a ton of alliances, but each ally along the way, as we mentioned already, believed him, no matter how many other people he backstabbed. Some people caught on and wanted him gone, like Sandra, of course, but not enough at the same time. You might think that this behavior came back to bite him at the end, but a bit of a spoiler, I think we'll find out it wasn't the scheming and plotting too much that did it, but perhaps issues pertaining to, I'd say the fifth rule.
Well, and I do think that his scheming and plotting in the manner that he did actually made him more of a desirable person to keep around, because it always kind of kept the focus off of someone over here, because they were more focused on what Russell was doing over there. And so you kind of want that guy, right? Because he's going to be the focal point and not everybody else. And because he's the focal point, and because of the way that he's scheming and plotting, which was pure insanity at times, then people are getting angry at him. And so, again, the attention's off of you and the attention's on Russell. And so I think it's a good thing to have in your camp, if it's not involving you, right? If it's someone that you can kind of keep there and utilize to your benefit, if it works to your benefit.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, the third rule talks about being flexible. Last podcast, I didn't even bother asking you how you thought Sandra did here because she's freaking Sandra, the woman who perfected anybody but me. And I think if anything, she increased her flexibility here in the way she jumped back and forth between trying to help the heroes and sticking with the villains.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, that was due in large part to the inability of the heroes to do anything useful whatsoever. But she was smart enough to look at her options and go with the one that gave her the best chance of continuing while still making active attempts to keep other doors open.
Yes. And I think that that's the key component of it, is those active attempts. She never completely shut down those options. And I thought it was really impressive that she was able to try, but then still managed to stay in the group over here, even though they all knew, well, I think Sandra's over there talking to Rupert, and I think Sandra's sharing some information, and I think Sandra's doing this. She was still able to find herself welcomed back in, obviously because she is a number. So it's one more vote for them to have. But the fact that they were kind of allowing that behavior was interesting. And she kept doing that throughout the entire game. So she did have an ability to maneuver about and go to, you know, different. I'm sorry, my phone is dinging at me.
That's Sandra saying, will you work with me?
That would be awesome.
Yeah. All right. Well, since I didn't ask you about Sandra, I will ask you what you thought of how Parvati did here. That's actually the text I just sent you. How did Parvati do here?
Well, I think Parvati had to be flexible because at the beginning, she was realizing right from the start that no one wanted to work with her. So she chose the person that was going to have her back. But then at the same time, she didn't want to separate herself from him either because there was a benefit to that. So it's this weird kind of flexibility where she was willing to go outside of her comfort zone to find someone that she could work with. And then she was willing to put up with some really horrible stuff to stay with this guy. So does that make her flexible or just really understanding? I don't know. But it was an interesting combination to see because I do think that she had a set idea of how she wanted to play the game. She was willing to maneuver and come at it in different ways if necessary, but she was holding true to her villains. So she was flexible in certain components of the game, but also very dedicated to those people that she was close to.
Well, and I think, you know, you say she was holding true to it. I think that she planned, as everybody feared, to get together with the people, certain people on the hero side. But those people were gone or lying to her by the time the merge came.
Yeah.
This is the problem with whether it was an official pregame alliance or whether, you know, they were just friends from before. So they were thinking they would get back together again. This is the problem with anything like that. You don't know the situation you're going to be in when you actually get to the game. We saw that in Winners at War, too. We knew certain people had certain pregame alliances, but they were put into situations where adhering to that alliance didn't make sense because of what was going on in the game.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, so Parvati, yeah, she locked in with Russell and Danielle. She formed a bond with Jerry. She even became friends with Sandra when it became clear they needed her to stick around for a while. So, yes, I know she was accused of hooking her saddle onto Russell and riding him into the finals. She actually gave herself a number of other options.
Mm-hmm.
If it didn't work out, she just chose not to use those other options.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, all right. Well, now, what do you think about Russell's flexibility?
Oh, my gosh. I don't even know where to start with this guy because
nobody ever does.
I know. And he is so fascinating. If you really just look at the reasons why he would suddenly want to vote someone out, and it was usually tied to, they're coming after me. And so he would change everything and flip it on
his head.
Or
I imagine that they might be coming after me. Yeah.
Right. And so I think he was incredibly flexible in his ability to just turn on people on a dime if he thought he needed to, and was willing to tell people to their face that they were going to go home without necessarily worrying about any of the ramifications for him, because if that's what suited him in the moment, that's what he was going to do. And so his game was, it was all over the place sometimes. Like, you never really knew where he was coming from, because all of a sudden he's making a deal with this person over here. And then the next scene, he's like, yeah, she's got to go. Because that's what I, and so it was really kind of chaotic. And so, I mean, I don't even know if you could describe him as flexible, of more just like operating out of necessity. I feel like where he was coming from, where he thought this is what I have to do right now because it's the best for me, does make him flexible, but it also makes it really hard to keep track of everything.
Yeah. I mean, in my first Why Russell Lost column, you know, on the website, I discussed how Russell kept multiple potential allies around to give himself a large amount of flexibility and then continued to keep his options open even after the merge. Now, I would echo that again now, perhaps even going further, because he recruited Candace while also keeping an eye on Sandra. And then he made a deal with Danielle and later went against her. Then he promised final three to Colby and Rupert and changed it when Parvati won immunity. You know, even when even going to the final three, he had the option of taking any two of the women with him. He always had an out for any situation. I mean, except for final tribal council, but we'll get to that later. So, but not yet, because we're only at the fourth rule, which tells players not to let their emotions control them. Now, last podcast, we talked about how Sandra followed this rule very well, and that continued into this season. A good example is Rupert, who she liked, she wanted to save, as we discussed earlier. But when it came down to it, he was hurting her game, and he had to go. On the flip side, Russell was somebody she definitely did not like. And yes, she kept trying to get rid of him, but once she realized that her best play was to get to the end with him, she held her nose and voted with him rather than making it into a personal issue.
Right. Yeah. And I do love what she said about Rupert when she was voting him out.
Oh, yes. That I'm going to vote for you again and you're still going to give me the $1 million.
Yeah. Like, that's knowing someone incredibly well, because I do think that she and Rupert had a really special bond. Unfortunately, you know, Rupert just plays this game, I think, differently than she plays this game, obviously. But he's from a, he's just coming.
She's
from,
won twice. He's won never.
I know. Yeah. Because he's looking for the good in people. But so it is incredible to see that she said that in her tribal council, voting him out. And then he turned around and was like, happy to vote for her again.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's great.
Yeah. Now, similarly, Parvati had no problem here, and she certainly didn't let her emotions interfere in a decision to vote somebody out. It didn't matter if she knew them well outside the game, had been a potential ally of theirs here, or even an actual ally in a prior season. If they were in her way, they were gone. Of course, she wasn't as ruthless about it as Russell and didn't kick them when they were down, but we'll, again, talk about that when we get to the fifth rule.
Yeah, and I do think that she's someone who could have found herself in a really dark place, just knowing what she was up against. If everyone is gunning for you right at the start and nobody wants to align with you, you can either, you know, hide in a corner and just hope they don't vote you out, but eventually they will, or you can try to do something about it. And so she kept that in check too, because there is that natural reaction that you have when you find out a group of people might not like you very much. And she didn't let that sway her. She actually, I think, used that as fuel for herself to go further in the game.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I already just referenced Russell a moment ago, and if there's one thing that's certain, it's that Russell did not let warm and fuzzy emotions interfere with his decisions.
No.
He didn't care who someone was, what they thought they meant to him. If he thought it was in his best strategic interest for them to leave the game, they were gone. End of story. Now, remember, though, that there's two different ways emotions can come into play. And one way that did get involved here, where he got on the wrong side of here, was that if someone angered him, he was very likely to flip on them, which was something, again, that Sandra used to her advantage to get him to turn on Coach.
Right. And I do think that a lot of his game was controlled by anger. And unfortunately, it was very obvious to everyone he was playing with, which is why Sandra knew exactly what to say in order to turn the tables. And so he definitely didn't keep his emotions in check, especially when he used somewhat of a threat when he was talking to people, and the way that he would, you know, scare tactics they talked about that he used a lot too. So, but I think that that was, I think it was coming from a genuine place from him, but that doesn't make it okay. Like, right. He was upset or he was angry and he was being emotional, and then he was taking it out on the people that he was playing the game with.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, since we're talking about Russell's emotional state and anger, let's move into the fifth rule and continue talking about him, because it talks about the social game and reminds players that they need to pretend to be nice. Clearly, this is an area where Russell sucked. In the reunion, Jeff Probst asked Russell if he was aware of the jury while playing, and Russell said he didn't care about that and plays as hard as he can. Since this is a throwback podcast, I'll give a throwback reference to a famous line from Mythbusters, where Jamie would often try an experiment, not work, and he'd be like, "Well, there's your problem." There it is, Russell. He didn't care about the jury.
Yeah.
Now, if we want more of a problem, when I interviewed Russell after this season, he flat out said, "I didn't only knock them out, I kicked them when they were down. So what?" And of course, the obvious answer to his question of "so what" is, so you're in third place. That's what.
Right.
You know, Russell didn't just vote people out. He made them hate him in the process.
Yes. And I think Danielle is a perfect example of this. That was almost uncomfortable to watch. The whole buildup when it started, his response to it, how he interacted with her. I mean, this was someone that he had been playing the game with from the beginning. This is someone who, if she's on the jury, she's either going to vote for you or Parvati. Now, if both of you are sitting next to each other, she's going to have to choose between the two. But this was someone who definitely was with him the whole game, even though she was also with Parvati. And to see how he turned on her and how he made her cry at, you know, the tribal council, how do you ever expect to get her vote in the end when that's the way that she's been treated?
He doesn't care about the jury.
Right. And that's a problem, clearly. You know, that's clearly a problem. Yes. Because those are the people that you're going to then ask to respect the game that you're playing, but you're not showing any respect to them as players. And I do think that that is a very hard thing to balance. And it's difficult when you have to vote these people out and you have to kind of do it in a, I don't even know what the word is, which just can't be mean about it, right?
Right.
And
right.
And he would be openly mean about it, and he would be mean to people's faces, and we've already talked about the scare tactics, and so all of that, when you just kind of add that together and then you have them sitting across from you, they're going to get all wrapped up in the, this is how this guy treated me, he treated me like shit, why am I going to give him my vote when he treated me the way that he did? And so right. it was a really hard thing to watch, because his game was so great, but his social skills, and he thinks he's got the best social game. I mean, he referred to himself as like the godfather, basically, when he's like, when he looked at Jerry and told her to vote for Danielle and she flipped her vote. Well, that had nothing to do with Russell. That had everything to do with Jerry knowing, I'm taking this guy to the end if I'm in the final three, because everybody hates him, because she was recognizing what was happening. And that's why she said, I'm sealing my fate right now. It had nothing to do with Russell being a godfather and controlling anything.
Yeah. Now, I mean, I asked Russell about his comments, both at the reunion and then, why do you kick people when they're down? And he told me, I'll always do that. If you can't get me in the game, I have to play full speed ahead to get to the finals. If I don't, I'll end up in Ponderosa and won't even make it to the finals. I have to play so hard. So that's what I do. I'll make it to the end always.
You're going to hurt your throat.
I feel like the voice just kind of comes and goes, but, and I mean, he's at least right that you need to get to the end to have a chance at winning. This is something we have discussed before, but usually we discuss it in a different way. We discuss it, you know, people making big moves who end up getting knocked out before they get to the end.
Right.
He was missing the kind of huge piece that you don't need to kick people when they're down for that to happen.
Right.
That's not part of getting to the end.
Right. You don't need to be mean to make it to the end. You can play the game that you're playing, and you can be exceptionally great at the game without also being an asshole.
Right. Well, I mean, going back to the reunion, Jeff Probst tried to get Russell to understand, asking if he was aware in the game that when he got vicious with another player, like he did with Rupert, that he wouldn't get his jury vote. When he betrayed Jerry, he probably wouldn't get her vote. Did he think about the fact that he was missing the social game? And Russell just kept saying he didn't care about that. He expanded on it more when I spoke to him, and I think it opened up a window, a scary window, into the way he thinks. I asked him about Jerry, and he said, Jerry's weak. She's a weak person. The social game comes from people like Jerry. They invented the word. There's three criteria to vote. Outplay, outwit, outlast. People like Jerry invented the social game. She's weak and they all are. This is the ultimate test. If you can get stabbed in the back and vote for the person who did the three things on the sign, if you vote like you're supposed to be voting and somebody out of nowhere threw in the social game. No, there's no social game on the sign. If you make it to the end, you obviously had a good social game because you made it to the end. They aren't going to take a butthole to the end. It's just bitter people who say he didn't have a good social game. It just don't make sense to me.
Well, listen, we see people make it to the end who get dragged there, right? So
yes.
You can make it to the end without having a social game because if people think they can beat you, you can make it to the end.
And that's exactly right. I mean, there's a lot to unpack in what he said.
Mm-hmm.
But that is the main thing. And, you know, let's also look at the claim that people wouldn't take a butthole to the end. He was living proof that that's untrue.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you just called him that before you even heard this quote.
And I used the term. I apologize if I offended anyone.
Yes, butthole's so much better. You know, he was just doing it for media, I guess. But yeah, we have seen throughout the years and just throughout doing this series of podcasts that it is blatantly false to say anyone who made it to the end has a good social game.
Right.
I mean, it's idiotic to think that just because the sign doesn't specifically say out social game,
mm-hmm.
that means it never existed.
Right. And something else that we've talked about quite a few times is the idea that if someone is looking at two players and they have to decide between them and they think that they played basically the same exact game, they're going to vote for the person they like more, period. I mean, that's what happens because people need to differentiate between the two options. And he and Parvati, they played the whole game together, right? So it was very similar in how they mm-hmm. played and what they did. Parvati was more likable. She got more respect for the game that she played versus what he did because he was being mean. She wasn't being mean to people. And so I do think that there is a huge part to that likability factor when people are looking for a reason to vote for someone. And if they need to differentiate, that's what they're going to go with.
Yeah. I mean, another thing that I found particularly amusing was he said Jerry invented the social game. It's like, Russell, did you see Jerry on her original season? She was voted out because they disliked her so much.
Right.
Okay. She did not invent this. She invented the antisocial game, maybe,
mm-hmm,
but she certainly didn't invent the social game. So,
he was better this season.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, throughout the years, it is fairly well known I have not been a Jerry fan, but I was rooting for her here.
Yeah. I love her. And let me just give her props here as well. Not just because how well she played the season, but also her attire. Whoever decided what she was going to wear for the game, she did. I was so jealous of what she was wearing when she was out on that island. Like, she was hooked up. She had comfortable looking clothes that she had options. She was stylish in addition to being in clothes that made sense outside. Everything about it was working from head to toe. So
she didn't invent the social game, but she invented the style game.
Gosh. One of the best dressed survivors ever. Every time I saw her in whatever thing she had put together with the minimal amount of clothing they have, I was jealous. I'm like, look at her. She's on a runway every time she comes onto the screen. It was so impressive.
All right. Well, Russell had some more to say about The Social Game when I noted to him that Jeff Probst seemed to be asking if he should have been taking the jury into account more. I'm done doing the Russell
good,
impression.
Your voice
at this point.
Is
yeah.
Go.
Yeah. And his response to me was Jeff Probst is even more warped or is even warped now. He brings the social game aspect to the game. He knows that's not right. It's not like that. It wasn't like that when Richard Hatch won, and that was a pure season. It got worse because people played harder and harder. When you play harder, you stab people in the back deeper and deeper, and they get mad. My job is to get rid of everybody, make it to the end, win the $1 million.
Now, but you can't do that.
Right. He was right about his job, but what he continued to miss was that the way you win the $1 million is to convince the people you voted out to give it to you.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, that's part of the job. As Colby said in his Jury Speaks video, sometimes I wonder if he's ever seen an episode before in his life, because he plays this game as though all it takes is making it to the end.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, and then Colby told me arrogance is why he didn't get a single vote. The problem with Russell is he has an inability to show any humility. It's his arrogance that will prevent him from ever winning this game.
Well, and Jerry said something very similar, too, when she was getting interviewed, that her vote, the reason she didn't vote for him is because he wasn't humble. Like, he showed no humility at all in that final tribal council. And and that was really because she had thought she was going to vote for him because she did actually respect the game that he played. So I think that's interesting that she also had the same type of response.
Right. Right. Now, Russell may have valid points, depending on your point of view, about how the jury should vote. We saw in your season, for example, that most people treated it much more like a game, didn't have hard feelings when it was all said and done.
Mm-hmm.
But there also wasn't a Russell there being a total butthole to all of you.
Right. Yeah, very true.
Yeah.
But and I was also very aware of who was going to be on the jury and who didn't like me and who wasn't going to vote for
right.
me. You just know this. You're like, okay, that person's definitely not going to vote for me.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I mean, the fact of the matter is you have to play the game as it is, not as you think it should be.
Right,
you
or the way that you want it to be. Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. You can't play chess and decide the rook should be able to move diagonally as well as horizontally and vertically. So you're just going to do it.
Right.
You can't decide how the jury has to vote. Do I personally want them to vote based on strategy? Yes. But if someone insults them repeatedly, it's a lot less likely they're going to vote for that person, no matter how good a strategic game they played.
Right. For sure. People are human. Mm-hmm. And people have emotions, as we've discussed, you know, with the rules, and you're not supposed to play with emotion, but people still include emotion when they're voting. They just
yeah.
do. And maybe they shouldn't. Maybe it should be a straight on strategy, how you played the game. But part of his strategy included knocking people down the way that he did. And
right.
so I don't think that people should dismiss that and not take that into account when they're making their decisions about who should win. Because that was part of his game. It wasn't just like, oh, I had a blow up and I said some things that weren't so nice about that person and I apologize. No, that was his entire gameplay the whole way through.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm going to use a comparison that I've used before and which even appears in the rules now. But I think the first time I used it originally was in my Why Russell Lost column for this season. One of my sons was around 10 at the time, and Russell reminded me of him. When my son was bowling in tournaments at lanes he wasn't used to, he would throw the ball and it wouldn't curve like it did on our home lanes. Did he adjust in order to get better shots? No, he complained to me and kept stubbornly throwing the ball in exactly the same way. I would tell him, no matter how many times you do it, the lane is not going to change for you.
Right.
So you need to adjust to the lane.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Similarly, Russell could keep insisting forever that the jury should have adjusted to his style of gameplay. But even he acknowledged it wasn't going to happen.
Yeah.
He believed he could play the game again and again and again and make it to the finals again. But he seemed to know he wouldn't win. Well, there's a clue. You needed to change. The game's not going to.
You got to read the room.
Yeah. Or read the rules.
Good point. Well played.
All right. That was a lot about Russell. in when we said we're just going to talk a bit about them.
And we started with Russell.
Yes. So I think it's time to move now up the line to Parvati, who is widely considered to have one of the best social games in Survivor history.
Mm-hmm.
You talked earlier about, you know, kind of the magic that surrounds her. Now, when I interviewed Jerry, she said, that's why I voted for her. She is probably one of the best social players, even though her flirtations are so blatant and out in the open and so sickening. I was so amazed at how it worked. I want to be friends with her for a long time because I want to learn her mojo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She was like, if you could bottle it up and sell it.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's exactly it. Everybody knew going into the game that Parvati would use her flirtatious ways to make friends and influence people. And yet she was still able to do it.
Yeah. But I repeat what I said before. She's able to get away with it because she also comes with other things. She brings other things to the table. You know, it's not just that one component of herself that she's relying upon to get through the game. She's also a hell of a player. So I do think that her social game is so great because it is backed up with also a great strategic game. And so she balances everything out really, really nicely.
Yeah. Now, you know, time after time, Parvati was supposed to be the target. Time after time, she survived. Now, some of it was due to Tyson screwing up or the strategic use of an immunity idol or two. You know, I mean, we talked about that in our preview for why for Winners at War. We talked about why the winners lost. And Parvati was one we talked about where she should have been out of this game way earlier had it not been for Tyson screwing up an easy vote. She probably shouldn't have won the game she did, bringing along Suri, if it had been a final three, which they expected it to be.
Mm-hmm.
So as good as she is in some aspects, she also definitely has her flaws. But yeah, she still, when she had the opportunity, you know, she used her abilities in this area. And even when she was using the double idol play, it wasn't just the idols. It was knowing how to use it because she played Amanda to get information from her and realized Amanda was completely lying.
Right.
You know, and then even at the very end, she convinced Russell to save her after he had decided it would be better to take Jerry to the end.
Yeah. And what an interesting conversation to put yourself in and have to sit through and take when she was basically being told, I'm not taking you. Like, I'm not going to bring you. And Russell is debating who he's going to bring based upon how many votes he's going to get from people on the jury. And really just kind of not in his mind. But it was so interesting to watch her respond to this. And Sandra, the same thing. I mean, he told Sandra, he's like, you're not going to win. Like, no one's going to vote for you. And she's like, that's fine. I'll take $100,000. I don't care. Second place is fine. It's like they fed into his ego and like, oh, no, Russell, I mean, this is, they were allowing him to build himself up and he's going to be the big winner. And who is he going to sit next to? And just the way that he spoke to them was so demeaning and just putting them down and like, yeah, you're definitely not going to win. Or Parvati, I'm not going to tell you because you are going to win. And that's, I don't want you sitting next to me because you're going to win. Just so in your face. And these girls took it because they knew they had to, because it just fed into his ego and it got them what they needed.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, moving to Sandra, of course, Russell had his own opinion of her social game, saying her social game is the worst of all.
Oh, you tried. You were going to go back.
Well, it's just second nature now. I mean, I stopped myself. Now, first, he was clearly wrong because he still didn't know what an actual social game was. And as I said earlier, he's a butthole. But beyond that, I would argue that Sandra never deserved to be on the villain tribe to begin with. We discussed this at the top of the podcast.
Right.
And we even talked about last podcast that most people saw her as straightforward and nice in general, which is why she could get angry, but it didn't work against her the way it did for others.
Right.
But I guess she was remembered more for her arguments with Johnny Fairplay and her cutting words. So into the villains tribe she went. I don't know.
Well, and that's what I was talking about that in our last podcast, that the idea of Sandra has become more than what she actually was in that regard. She is genuinely a really nice person. I've hung out with her. I've talked to her. Like, she's an incredible person and very kind and a great mom and loves her family, all of those things. And not that you can't have all of those things and be a villain, but I do think that there was a stretch there in saying that she was a villain. And I think it's just based upon what you just said, that there was this idea of Sandra, because she spoke her mind and because she told you exactly what she thought.
And because she can get effing loud too.
Right. Now she's a villain for it. But I do think that there was a little bit more of a willingness to use that this time around, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, last podcast, of course, we mentioned that she could get, quote, lippy. And that was also a term Russell used this time. She often said what was on her mind, but Russell wanted everyone to bow down and worship him. So it's no surprise that someone like Sandra would piss him off.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, she was no Parvati when it came to her social game, but she was a damn sight better than Russell.
Yeah, mm-hmm, for sure.
All right. The sixth rule warns against being too much of a threat. And last time I quoted my original Why Sandra Won column. So I'm quoting a quote of myself. When I said she was so non-threatening that people probably would have forgotten she was there if she wouldn't have been swearing at them. Nobody worried about Sandra winning immunity. Nobody worried about getting her voted off before she could convince the jury of what a great player she was. She didn't just fly under the radar. She tunneled beneath the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And even though I'm, you know, double quoting myself here, I say it again. I mean, the other villains voted out Courtney before her.
I know.
Because they viewed Sandra as less of a threat in this regard. Courtney!
Which is fascinating because you've got, they were worried about who's going to flip. And you've got Rupert as one of the heroes, someone that she played with, had a very mm-hmm. close relationship with on her previous season, who voted for her to win. They had a special connection, and you're worried about Courtney flipping? I mean, it's just one of those situations where I don't know if that was really thought all the way through. I guess maybe they were worried about Amanda and Courtney, maybe, but it didn't, they didn't ever talk about that. They right. worried about Parvati and Amanda. So I do think that there is something to be said about those prior relationships, and obviously they are significant and should be considered, but nobody seemed to consider that relationship when they were deciding between Courtney and Sandra.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the important thing to remember for this rule is that Sandra repeatedly said at the reunion, and again since then, being seen as weak and non-threatening is a strategy.
Mm-hmm.
It might not be a strategy that viewers enjoy watching as much, but it worked twice for her. Vote right. after vote, she hung around because she wasn't a threat. And it continued right up to the end when, like Natalie before her, Sandra played up her weaknesses to Russell so he wouldn't feel threatened by taking her to final tribal council.
Mm-hmm.
She agreed when he kept saying there was no way she would get even a single vote. She wisely nodded her head along with his proclamations and then privately told us, "I don't know about that."
And she was right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Very impressive, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think that it's interesting, though, just worth a note, that Parvati was recognizing these things about Sandra and was trying to convince Russell to see these things as well, even saying, "I would vote for Sandra in the end." And he was completely just dismissive of this idea that Sandra was going to get any votes, and had kind of convinced himself that she wasn't a threat and she wasn't going to be an issue. So he's definitely going to bring her, not listening to Parvati at all.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, speaking of Parvati, on the flip side here, she utterly failed at this rule throughout most of the game because, well, it's a returning season and there isn't, you know, we talked about it already. There isn't much she could have done about a situation like this. She was viewed as the biggest threat there. She had a target on her back as a threat before the player's feet touched the Samoan sand. You know, time after time, she just kept escaping the vote one way or another, as we discussed.
Yeah, I mean, I do think the run that the villains went on really helped her.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Also her display of her challenge work, if you will, or the what she was able to bring to the challenges helped her as well, because they wanted to keep winning. Well, we need to keep winning. So we're mm-hmm. going to keep people that will keep us winning. So I think that a lot of that did work to her benefit, but then it also worked against her because they saw how great she was in these challenges. And who can stand on a pole that's like 20 feet in the air with one little toe hanging out. I mean, she would, it was crazy. I mean, just like insane, the abilities that she has, which certainly doesn't help her because then they can see her as a threat and someone who's going to win, which when she didn't win immunity, she was also very worried because she was convinced it's my time to walk out the door.
Right, right. Now, I do think at the end that she pulled off something of a minor miracle in convincing Russell that she was less of a threat than Jerry to bring along to the final three. We've discussed this somewhat already. I have to think it's because Russell figured, as Sandra told me, Parvati and Russell are a snake with two heads. In other words, he could claim that Parvati just did whatever he told her, and thus she shouldn't get any votes. But it was a huge risk to take someone who had been talked about as a threat since day one.
Right. And also someone who sat in a tribal council, maybe right the one right before, when he was trying to feed that idea that he had carried her along. And she looked right at him and was like, no, we've helped each other. Mm-hmm. And tried to correct him. So clearly she's going to stand up for herself and she's going to defend her game and how she played it, including putting him in his place at tribal council.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, as for Russell himself, well, he certainly thought he was the biggest threat. But as Sandra told me, after a certain point, everyone wanted to go up against Russell because he was zero threat to actually win. Everyone seemed to know that except him, which I find endlessly amusing. And, you know, this goes back to what we were talking about in the beginning where you mentioned getting to the final three twice in a row is quite an accomplishment. Except, well, everyone knew he was zero threat, which is why they allowed him to go to final three.
Right. Yeah. And she was talking to people about that, that everyone wants to go up against him because everyone dislikes him so much. Mm-hmm. So, you know, she's certainly very aware of what was transpiring, and he was blissfully unaware of what was transpiring.
Yes. All right. The seventh rule covers idols and advantages, and here Sandra had to learn something new compared to her first time around. But as I mentioned in the first rule, Sandra watched and learned from previous seasons. And one thing she told me from that was, if you have an idol, don't tell anybody.
Thank you. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, I think in her case, this was particularly important because if she had told anyone she had the idol, it would have drawn attention and elevated her threat level. But nobody even considered her. They were talking about, well, this person might have it, this person.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody said, well, Sandra might have it.
Right.
And so it made them suspect each other more.
Yeah. The only thing I was nervous about was when she didn't know what to do with it. And then she just buried it in like another bush and everyone's out looking for this thing. I was like, no, I don't know about that. So thank God nobody ended up finding it. But
right.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that it was a very smart play for her to hold on to it and to also sit at tribal council and really pay attention to how people were talking, things being said, because she had walked into that tribal council claiming she wasn't planning on playing it because she's that good, but then kind of reading the room and realizing there might be an issue here. And so she knew enough to play it. Now, I don't think she was going home that night, but she was playing it, I think, the safe move, because that's the last tribal council she can play it anyway.
Well.
So why don't you play it? Because there's no reason not to, unless you want a really swanky thing to bring home with you.
Right. Now, Parvati, of course, made some of the biggest moves ever with her idols. She took her own idol and the one that Russell gave her, which JT gave him, and figured out the best way to use them to turn the hero's attempt to oust a villain back against them, and JT in particular, after she saw right through Amanda. At the same time, she was trying to show that she could play the game without having to get permission from Russell, which did not make him happy at all because he wanted complete control. But it didn't end up coming back to bite her. So she was fine there.
Yeah. And I do think that I was actually, as I was watching this, the other thing about this that we've got to give her credit for is in that immunity challenge when she and Danielle were the last two left. And I know Danielle is the one that said it to her, but she asked Danielle basically like how long she was going to go or something along those lines. And Danielle wasn't going to get down. And she reminded Parvati, you have an idol. I don't, basically. And if you look at it from that perspective, if Danielle wins immunity and then Parvati's got two idols to utilize, that's three people she could potentially protect at that next immunity challenge, just increasing their chances of the villains coming out on top, which they had been doing. And clearly she pulled it off beautifully.
Right, right. Now, Russell, of course, called himself the Idol King, and he did find one and have one given to him by JT. I guess he deserves a little credit for convincing JT to help him, but really, that was all due to JT's assumptions and, quite frankly, stupidity. Russell didn't really do anything spectacular there. It was,
but he fed into it, which was so much fun.
He did feed into it, mm-hmm. but he didn't know he was going to get an idol. I mean, who would ever think that? You know, he fed into it as part of strategy. But, oh my God, the assumptions that came from that of JT sitting there. And I know we talked about that on, on why JT lost, but the absolute, I know for a fact that this is what's going on there. You don't know crap, man.
Right. And I do feel sorry for Colby because he was like, hey, CJT, after this is done, he's going to give you something. It's like, poor Colby.
Yeah, man.
But it was a group decision, right? They all decided it was going to be their survivor moment. It was going to be a moment to remember. And we all remember it well.
Yeah, I mean, they all decided, but JT was just so absolutely certain. It was just amazing. Yeah. So
now we're going to take a quick break for our sponsors, and we'll be right back. We're back, so let's get back to the show.
All right. Appendix A is about keeping your end goals in mind when voting and says to vote out the weak, then the strong, then the weak, then the strong. Now, for this appendix, I want to highlight some of the things Sandra told me when I interviewed her, because they're applicable here. She said, me being a weak player is actually a strategy, though I am weak, so it's natural. I felt like Colby's strategy was to be weak. As Jeff pointed out, Colby had won the most challenges at one point. The second time he played, he was a physical threat and they got rid of him. By the time we merged, we were going to get rid of Colby last because he wasn't a threat. That worked for him. That was the reason he made it to the end, because they saw him as a weak player. You can be strong when the tribe is a tribe. But the minute you're an individual, you're not going to win every challenge. Me being a weak player was strategy. People who want to play should write that down and remember. If you're strong, be careful. If you're weak, that's how I play.
Don't be Superman in a fat suit. It doesn't work.
Yes. Don't be Superman at all, because you'll probably encounter your kryptonite at some point.
Right. Not very true. Yeah, no, I think that she recognized the significance of it for her. And she also made it work, because she is someone who could certainly be a first boot, just if they're going to base it on just voting out the weak person first. So you have to bring something else to the table. And I think being a repeat player probably benefited her in this regard, because they all knew Sandra. They all knew how she was. So you didn't have to deal with that aspect of it. People kind of expected it and knew it. And then they just kind of worked with it in all of their challenges, but it certainly was something that she leaned into, as I referenced before, that she knows what her strengths are, she knows what her weaknesses are, and she knows how to work it into her game.
Yes, absolutely. So we can move on to Appendix B, which covers the jury phase and final tribal council. Now, last podcast, we discussed how Sandra wasn't that great at final tribal council, but she didn't need to be because the jury was already on her side. And we got confirmation of that, by the way, on Twitter, when the out of context Twitter account posted something we said. And then Ryan O jumped in and commented that, you know, to support what we had said, basically, about, you know, them being against the outcasts. And then I also encouraged him to, you know, tell that to the Edge of Extinction jury. And to that, he did a dancing gif, or not emoji. So anyway, but, you know, that was last time. This is this time. And we have something, the flip side, for a different finalist, because it's clear the jury was almost 100% against Russell before they started. And as you've already mentioned, he made sure they were completely against him by the end, because you talked about this. I think the only person who was planning to vote his way was Jerry.
Right.
But then he was such an ass that he blew that. And you quoted an interview from Jerry. Well, she told me, Russell made it very easy for me not to vote for him. When I got voted out, I really did respect the way Russell played the game for the most part. But sitting in the final tribal council and listening to him basically belittle and slap every single one of us in the face by saying things like denying there was any luck involved in the game. I personally saved his butt one time specifically by choosing him over Rob. Not showing any gratitude, not being apologetic, not being respectful of all the people he had to oust. His arrogance just made me sick, and there was no possible way I could give him my vote. Also, in Rupert's Ponderosa video, he said everyone left wanted Russell in the final three, and the jurors could understand why, because they figured Russell had no chance of getting any votes.
It's crazy, but true. All very true.
Yeah. I mean, Russell, in Final Tribal Council, did a decent job explaining his point of view that strategy should be rewarded. The problem goes back to something you said earlier. His ego and arrogance were on full display.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I understand how in his mind luck was not a factor, but luck is always at least a little bit of a factor. And he needed to acknowledge that. He couldn't control who wins an immunity at a given time because he didn't know what challenge it would be. He could plan for multiple possibilities, but that didn't mean his fellow players would all go along with what he believed was the smartest outcome.
Right. Well, and you look at what happened with Parvati. She just sat in the right seat and got the clue to the hidden immunity item.
It literally dropped into her lap.
Right. That's luck.
Yes. You know, and so when it came down to it, he said it at the reunion. We've already talked about it. He just didn't care about the jury. And that showed his dismissive nature toward them certainly didn't want or make any of them want to vote for him.
Right. I agree with everything you've said.
Okay. Well, then I will move to the person that Jerry did vote for. And that's Parvati, because she made about the best appeal to the jury that she could. She stood up for herself as a player, discussing her challenge wins and strategic moves. The problem was that the majority of the jury thought of Parvati as an extension of Russell by that point.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, juror after juror said something to that effect, either in their Jury Speaks video or to me or elsewhere. Sandra told me anything that had to do with Russell or Parvati got attached to both of them. So anything like that, I benefited from, but wasn't blamed. So Russell even said as much to me, noting of Sandra, they voted for her because they didn't want to vote for Parvati because Parvati was with me. The thing was, Parvati just couldn't convince them that she didn't have the stink of Russell on her.
Yeah, and I do think that, unfortunately for Parvati, because she aligned herself with them at the beginning, it's really hard to then try to turn away from that at the end. And I know what Candace said was rather harsh, but I think that there is a lot of truth there, that there were so many times that he would be speaking to Parvati in a way that was very demeaning, or he would be doing something to someone else that was really kind of horrific. And she would continue to stand by him. She did it because she needed to, because she knew there was nowhere else that she could necessarily go. But I think she also recognized in a final three, I'll beat this guy because I am not him. I'm playing my own game, which is, as you've referenced, the idol play that she did without telling him. So I think she tried to separate herself from him. But also, if you look at the other option she had was Danielle. And what did he do to Danielle?
Right.
He roasted her and got her voted out. And so I think that Parvati ended up putting herself in a very difficult spot because she really did find herself locked in this relationship with this guy who was trying to convince her, I did this for you. I was saving you. And in reality, that's not what he was doing, but that's what he's claiming and that's what he's shouting and that's what he's saying. And so I really do think it put her in a very, very difficult.
Yeah, I mean, she needed Russell to make it to the finale, or at least she needed him for a good chunk of the way.
Right.
But once they both got there, she also needed to completely distance herself from him, and it just wasn't possible.
Right.
Russell's inability to play nice overpowered her social game, and the majority of the jurors just couldn't separate the two.
Yeah, I mean, but I also feel like the final tribal council's performances were kind of lackluster. I mean, there really wasn't a whole lot of things coming out that people didn't already know or they just weren't explained well. Maybe they just didn't show. I'm sure they didn't show much of it. But I left it kind of feeling like it's not as bad as I thought it was going to be as far as the jury really kind of giving it to Russell, but there must have been a lot more that we just obviously weren't privy to.
Yeah, I think so. Now, you know, Sandra, on the other hand, she got to the end with Russell as well, but she did separate herself from him.
Mm-hmm.
When I was originally watching and she began her opening statements, I was surprised to hear her talking about her failed strategies. I was thinking, why would you bring up the fact that everything you tried didn't work? It just didn't seem very smart. But then I realized what she was doing. She knew the jurors better than anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
It may have sounded like she was saying she failed, but she was actually saying the heroes failed. She tried to help them. She tried to get rid of the hated Russell, but they wouldn't listen to her. If they had, they wouldn't be sitting where they ended up.
Mm-hmm.
This not only succeeded in rightfully blaming the heroes for their own failures, but also did what I said needed to be done. She separated herself from what she called the snake with two heads. As she told me, that got me all five hero votes.
And she connected herself with the jury at the same time because she was acknowledging, I don't like this guy as much as you don't like this guy. And I don't like him so much. I was trying to vote him out and you all let him stick around. So she was really showing them, like, I don't want to play with this guy, but you all kind of forced my hand and this is where I find myself. But no, I want him gone just as badly as you all did.
Yeah. And I mean, Colby even confirmed it, saying I had to look back and she was the one person trying to help us heroes out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, all right, with that, it is about time to wrap things up. Jessica, what are your final thoughts about Sandra?
Well, here is my theory about the season as a whole.
Uh-oh.
And I know it's not theory. It's not going to be crazy.
Should I give you a drum roll?
No, it's just something that, like, as I was watching, I just kept seeing a whole lot of, I almost want to say, like, confrontation and brutal honesty coming from so many people, not just from the villains, but the heroes as well. You had James that was talking about Colby being a Superman in a fat suit. You had Russell pointing directly to Courtney and Sandra saying, I'm going to vote out one of these guys because they're so weak. You had people really willing to say, oh, and he was calling Rupert out and being the next coming and making fun of him for it. And there was a whole lot of egos happening this particular season. And I think that it makes sense because they were all designated these heroes versus villains. And we talked about how the theme really kind of took over. And I think people all kind of owned that and really took it to heart. But then they were so willing to be so brutal at the same time when they were talking to people that I just feel like there was interactions that we saw on this season that you've never seen on a season ever. And conversations happening in tribal council between two people like Boston Rob and Russell, where they weren't even talking to Jeff anymore. They were just talking to each other and calling each other out. And it was incredible to see because I feel like that fed into the ego of Russell. Because you had so many people that were so willing to do the same thing that it made him feel like it was okay. That it made him feel like, well, this is what we're doing. We're calling each other out. We're pushing each other to play this game harder. This is me against Boston Rob and his group versus my group. And so I do think that the Russell that we know, this was his environment. And he was able to play with people much differently than he played with the people in his previous season because they were on different level completely. And so I think the season hurt Russell in a way because it really fed into his ego as well, because he was dealing with so many people that had such big egos, which is fine. I mean, these are incredible survivor players. That's why they were put on the season. And so it was to his detriment that he ended up being here because it didn't work for him. But someone like Sandra, I don't think Sandra lets her ego take over. I think Sandra lets other people perceive her a particular way. And if that's the way they want to perceive her, great. And she owns it a little bit. She might lean in on it a little bit, but she's not someone that's going to go overboard with it. She still remembers where she is and where she needs to be and kind of centers herself, but also in this crazy game that she's playing. And then you've got Parvati that was kind of bigger than life coming into this game. And so she's one of those egos that didn't really find herself in a good place from the start and needed to figure out where to fit. And here comes Russell. And so I think they were all trying to fit into this game that they were presented, playing with people who are larger than life personalities, people that come with so much baggage from previous games that they've played in Survivor, with other people that they play the game with. And unfortunately, it worked for some, it didn't work for others. And I think Sandra was able to find a perfect balance in this villains versus heroes theme and make it work for her in a way that Parvati wasn't able to and Russell wasn't able to. People kind of didn't think she was a villain, right? And so it worked for her. And so I just think that overall, her win this season is really reflective of her ability to manage all of those egos, including herself, and find who she could play with and who she didn't need to play with, but also how to meld it all together and still be a villain without being too much of a villain. And so to her credit, I think that she just found a balance that Parvati wasn't able to achieve and Russell had no idea that he needed to find. So that's my thoughts.
Okay. Russell talked about how he would make it to the end every time he plays and use that to pat himself on the back. He's since been proven very wrong. But what he didn't realize was that one reason he made it to the end this time was that so many others wanted to go up against him. As Sandra told me, he was our goat. And we're not talking like the type of goat, G-O-A-T, that he thinks he is. Jerry said much the same thing to me, noting, no one likes Russell. Who better to sit next to at the end? According to Sandra, Parvati, Danielle, and others were all thinking that same thing. But even if he had made it to the end on his own strengths, he ensured that he couldn't win. And by joining herself to him at the hip, at least as far as the jury saw, Parvati ensured the same thing for herself. I asked at the beginning of the podcast, does this mean the jurors were voting against Russell and Parvati rather than for Sandra? And does it even matter? I'd say partially and no. Because if there's one thing that we've talked about multiple times over the course of our journey through the Survivor seasons, it's that an important factor is ensuring you get to the end with people you can beat. Sandra told me, after a certain point, everyone wanted to go up against Russell. He was the perfect goat. At some point, I just decided I had to make it to the end and go against him. I loved going against him. He knew I was coming after him. He would tell me to my face, I'm not worried about you. I would tell him, good, good, you shouldn't be. Sandra was not a challenge beast. She said herself that she was weak in that regard, but that helped her rather than hurting her, as once again, she could stay in the background and play her game. This time around, she needed to be more active and she was up to the task. Even more importantly, she knew when to make a move and when to hold back. A skill that is much more difficult than it sounds, especially with all the emphasis on big moves. We said it last time, and I'll say it again. Sandra was a master of the small moves. Plant a seed with Russell about Coach plotting against him. Hide in the bushes to gain information. Have a quick and quiet talk with Rupert to fill him in on the details. Some people will get an idea into their heads and push it until it knocks them out of the game. Sandra tried to boot Russell, but she saw it wasn't going to work because the heroes were playing like zeros. And besides that, realized she could make it to the end with Russell and beat him instead. Russell was simply clueless when it came to the jury, while Sandra was much better at understanding them. He had belittled every juror. He had lied to their faces, knocked them down, kicked them while they were down, and he still thought he could win. Parvati played a much better game than Russell, but she had connected herself too tightly with him. Sandra tried to help the people who ended up on the jury. She provided them with truthful information. She would have worked with them. She was literally on their side, a hero amongst the villains. And that is why Sandra won and the queen stayed queen. And villains always
win,
even if it's a hero amongst the villains.
Right. I like that. It's good. Very nice.
All right. Well,
We're done.
Now, let me remind everyone, of course, that the rules we just discussed are available as a poster. You've got two different types of t-shirts. You got this one.
That's right.
You got this other one.
And you can get them in sweatshirts, too.
Yes.
They're not just t-shirts. Sweatshirts. It's starting to get cold, right? A little chilly out.
I don't know about that. But yeah, it will be. If you order now, you'll be ready for the colder weather.
Right. It's great.
Yeah. For the shirts, the mug, go to robhasawebsite.com or robhasapodcast.com. Click on the merch link and browse through the designs. For the poster, go to tinyurl.com/DavidRulesPoster2. I also want to encourage people to check out the RHAP patron program at robhasawebsite.com/patron. We are giving more and more, Rob is giving more and more rewards to patrons. And we're beginning the Survivor season in very near future here. And there will be special patron call-in shows for Survivor. Just like there have been for Big Brother, there'll be some early podcast releases and more. Once you join, you'll see all the many different ways that the patron program, just has all these bonuses. Rob still has other patron call-in shows, a weekly Q&A show with his wife, Nicole. And there's the Facebook groups where, people talk about Survivor, Big Brother, and a whole bunch of other stuff. The beginning of the Survivor season is the perfect time to sign up if you haven't already. Go to robhasawebsite.com/patron. And once you get to the Facebook groups, make sure to say hello.
And you can also say hello to us on Twitter. I am at Jessica Lewis 89 and he is at David Bloomberg. So you should follow us both because we tweet a lot about randoms throughout various days. Mm-hmm. But we do a lot of tweeting about Survivor, and as you might have just heard, David Bloomberg mentioned new season of Survivor, like you didn't already know that was coming, but it's coming. And so you should definitely follow us both at Jessica Lewis 89, at David Bloomberg. We tweet during the episodes, and we just have a lot of discussion throughout the week about the game itself. So you should definitely follow us and see all of the great things that we're putting out there into the universe.
That's right. We will be, or at least I will be, live tweeting a Survivor. I'm sure you will be too, copying my tweets, then trying to claim them as your own.
Again. Listen.
Passed my 75,000th tweet, which is, both amazing and scary at the same time.
What we do, right?
Yes. And if you're on Twitter, of course, use the hashtag #WhySandraWon again.
Yes.
For this podcast. And of course, there's the one for this podcast overall, YX Lost. Everyone should also make sure you're subscribed to all of the RHAP Survivor podcasts at robhasapodcast.com/survivor or on your favorite podcatcher. We're also on the reality TV wrap ups feed, so you can sign up for that. And everything will be revving back up again, so you can find a wide variety of great content. I was just on the wrap up for the first four episodes of The Circle season 3.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone should definitely watch or listen to that if you haven't already.
Yes. And can I do my thank you?
Well, let me do one first because this marks the end of a long journey through so many different Survivor seasons and their winners. And I want to thank all the listeners for joining us along the way.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, listeners, you're the reason we're able to keep doing this. And yes. I want to thank you, Jessica, for all the work you put in. It's not always easy. It's a little easier for me. I am literally home all the time. I have my job, but I'm also an empty nester and, I'm not running to do different things. So it's a little easier for me than it is for you. So thank you very much.
Well, thank you, David, for including me in this. And I know that it was a lot of discussion and convincing me that we could do this because I am very aware of my time limitations between job, family, children, all of those things. So this was a big feat, but I will say incredibly enjoyable. I'm kicking myself now for not rewatching a bunch of seasons before I went out and played. I don't do this podcast because I think I was the best Survivor player. I do this podcast because I love Survivor and I think David Bloomberg is pretty awesome. So it's one of those things that I just appreciate the game and I appreciate the people that play it. So I also think we should thank everyone who allows us to do this, right? Because all of those people that put themselves out there are willing to be on a reality TV show and put themselves through the ringer the way that they do, and then allow people like us to talk about it. So I feel you. I went through it too. People talked about me, but I love doing it. I try to be respectful, and I hope that people appreciate that. So thanks, David. This was a lot, but we got through it. We definitely got through it.
Yes, but
there was lots of wine and chips.
Yeah, but when one journey ends, another begins. And in fact, has already begun by the time this podcast is posted, because we did our Survivor 41 preview. That's two podcasts from us in just a few days, plus the one I just mentioned for The Circle. So it was like three podcasts for me. You know, for Rob, that's like a day's work.
I know.
For me, that's a lot.
Yeah.
So, you know, everyone should make sure you catch up on all of those. Find out who it was that we thought would go first, who we think will follow the rules, who we made as our winner picks.
The crazy things David Bloomberg said.
The crazy things people said about David Bloomberg. I'm sorry, the awesome things certain people said about David Bloomberg. Yes, so yes, listen to that as well. And, you know, then we'll be back on our usual Survivor schedule to talk about why each player lost every week. You won't have to guess. Mm-hmm. Are they coming back in 1 week, 2 weeks, 4 weeks? No. Every week we will be here, and you know, we'll still be diving into not only the episode as we do, but interviews, secret scenes, anything that's not a spoiler, to figure it out each week. But it'll be a bit less time consuming than watching a whole season and looking back at a ton of old articles, even though this has been a lot of fun.
Yes. Yes. I'm anxiously awaiting a week where I just have to watch one episode.
And the secret scenes and the interviews.
Listen, I'll take that. That's fine. Because
I don't know what I'll do with myself.
My word. I mean, there were like, I'd look like, oh my God, I have so many episodes left. I got to get done. It was so much. But yes, fun. And we did. There was a lot of discussion deciding which seasons we should watch,
right,
too. So I appreciate that, because some are much more enjoyable than others. So, yeah.
Yeah. But, and just, you know, I mean, we talked about this before, but just because we skipped the season doesn't mean we didn't want to talk about it.
Right.
There were
right.
some that we had to skip because of scheduling, family, just, you know, I mean, we couldn't do back to back to back weeks. It just was not possible for us. So some seasons got left out, even though if they had come at a different place, we would have loved to do them. It just wasn't possible.
You were at the mercy of the list.
Yes. And that is, you know, that blame falls squarely on everybody who did the rankings. So,
that's right.
You know,
so I apologize if we missed one that you wanted, but listen, that's just the nature of the beast.
That's right. So, anyway, yes. So again, thank you to all the listeners. Jessica, did you have a couple of thank yous?
I interrupted you
before.
I appreciated that. Thank you. That was quite nice to put that out there in the universe. And thank you to Scott St. Pierre, who does all of the editing on Why Blank Lost. And it's incredible to know that he's able to keep up with all of this work as well. So thank you, Scott, for everything that you do. And also thank you to Will from America for the incredible theme song that he has written for David and I, because, you know, I get to be part of this now. So it's quite awesome. So thank you, Will. We appreciate it so much. And thank you again to David for being super awesome, David Bloomberg, who does all of this incredible work and has given us the rules of Survivor. And I don't know, someone that survivors are recognizing.
Yes, imagine that.
Crazy.
I know. So, all right. Well, thank you again, Jessica. And everybody, we will see you in roughly a week to talk about why the first player lost season 41.
Crazy.
Talk to you then. Bye.
You lost, sir. Feeling down, David and Jessica will turn it around. They'll break down the rules and they'll show you how. You played yourself and got voted out. This is why blank lost, and this is why blank lost. Oh, baby, this is why blank lost.